On the last weekday of every month, we review the top Michigan political news stories of that month. To help me do that today, Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press and Freep.com returns. Kathy, good to see you.
Hi, Mark.
And Zach Gorchow also is back with us. Zach's from Gongwer News and Gongwer.com. Hi, Zach.
Morning.
There was another flurry of road funding efforts just this week. As a matter of fact, we're looking back at the whole month, but this happened really this week. The Michigan Senate took a stab at funding a bill that had already passed the House last week. Can you describe what was in this, Kathy?
Well, it's called the 600-600 plan, and it means $600 million in new revenue and a $600 million shift from the general fund, which would add up to $1.2 billion for roads for a year. But the plan doesn't get fully phased in until 2021. It includes a rather modest gas tax hike, and the thing that is causing so much consternation in the Senate is a 40% hike in registration fees.
Mm-hmm. And I take it the existing revenue is already being spent on some number of things. Has the existing revenue that the proponents of this bill want to spend on roads, has that been identified?
No, it is not. And based on the changes that were under discussion on Tuesday, the existing revenue component would not come online for years. This is going to be labeled a $1.2 billion plan. It's really a $600 million plan when you get right down to it. That there will probably, I don't think Governor Snyder will still be in office when the general fund commitment comes into place. It'll be almost an entirely new cast of characters in the legislature.
So they would be obligated to target where the $600
well, they
came
would,
from.
But it can always be changed. I mean, it's just it would be a simple statutory change. You know, if the economy goes down, revenues go down, I just can't imagine they're going to sign away $600 million from the general fund for roads when they're going to have a bunch of holes to fill. So it's really an uncertain thing whether that other $600 million would actually come to be.
Mm. And I take it some number of Democrats fear that the existing revenue could very well come from social programs that they feel are very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. They say that it could come to harm local governments because revenue sharing comes out of general fund, and that funds things like police and fire. They fear that it also will come out of public education. As a result, I think that there's only been one Democrat in the House who has supported it. There are very few, if any, Democrats in the Senate who are going to support it, but the Republicans have a pretty large majority. But they haven't been able to come up with the votes for this plan, so we'll see next week.
Well, earlier this week, Republican House Speaker Kevin Cotter was still hopeful that lawmakers could reach a compromise this week. Here he is.
I think it would be a shame to get this close because I think there's going to be credit for nothing if it's not a signed solution. So we have to get it across the line.
Where does that stand here on Friday?
Well, here's the simple difference. The Senate had passed a plan in June. The $600 million in new revenue would have come entirely from raising the gasoline tax. The House plan, which was passed last week, $400 million in new revenue from registration fee hike, $200 million from the gas tax. Will they meet in the middle? That's the question. The Senate doesn't like the registration fee hike. The House thinks that's a better move because it's a more stable source of revenue given declining gasoline consumption. But it's a politically much more difficult thing. That's something people will notice is an all at once, when they renew their vehicle registration, $50, $100, maybe more. All at once, as opposed to when you fill up, it's just a little bit more each time.
But did it get talked about much after Tuesday?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
The Republicans and Democrats in the Senate were caucusing all week long. They didn't have a full contingent of membership in. There were a couple of senators out, so they say they delayed any vote on it until next week. We'll see if they take it up next week.
Flint's water woes continue to occupy a lot of airtime and column inches here this month. What's happened most recently, Kathy?
Well, the House and the Senate approved $9.35 million to help the city of Flint reconnect to the Detroit water system, and that happened. People are starting to get Detroit water out of their taps now, but there are a lot of investigations that are going on as to how this whole thing came to be. The EPA had been warning the state for months, even a year, that the Flint water was suspect, that there were that they were worried about it, that lead was leaching into the pipes that was going into people's homes. So there's state's investigations. There are there's been calls for federal investigations, and we'll see what happens.
Congressman Dan Kildee has said that he has requested an EPA investigation into the episode. Kildee is, of course, the U.S. congressman representing Flint and in that part of the state. Is that likely to happen?
Just be guessing. So I'm not going to make any predictions there. But the governor has formed a
task force.
I think most people would look at it and say there's some pretty, you know, independent-minded people on here. I mean, you've got the head of the Michigan Environmental Council, Chris Kolb, on there. I don't think anybody would say he's allied with the governor. This is a very liberal, former Democratic member of the legislature. So I think, you know, when you look at the makeup of that panel, it should be, you know, interesting to see what it comes up with. You've got a mayoral election in Flint coming up next week. There's a lot of people wondering, will the mayor of Flint survive given this, you know, storm around him, even though he's up against a total newcomer? That'll be an interesting item to watch.
He has to some extent criticized, though, the way this unfolded. He was both a part of the landscape and a part of the decision, I'm led to believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, I mean, Darnell Early, the former emergency manager, has taken a lot of heat here in the last few days over this.
Dane Walling did not have any legal authority at the time to make the decision to switch to Flint River Water because there was an emergency manager in place. However, he was very much part of the sales pitch to the public that this would work. I mean, there's a very visible picture of him pushing the button at the water plant to switch the water over to the Flint River. You know, he was part of raising the glasses of Flint River Water, and he is quoted several times saying the water would be safe. Now, he said, of course, since then we assumed it would be treated properly, but the fact, you know, these are not things you want to have to defend when you're up for election.
I'll point out that Darnell Early, the former Flint emergency manager and the current emergency manager for the Detroit Public Schools, will be our guest Monday morning here on Current State on WKAR. This whole landscape involves Darnell Early, and as I said, his name came up a number of times this week. Last week, he denied being the one responsible for the decision, and I know that comment earned a rebuke from State Senator Jim Ananick. What did these two guys say? How did that unfold?
Well, it's all about timing and who made what decision when. The emergency manager prior to Darnell Early was the one in charge when the decision was made to go to the Karagandhi water system. And there's just a lot of controversy over who made the decision on going to the Flint water. But also involved in this is Detroit's role in it. And Detroit pretty much cut the city of Flint off, said that when they were decided to go to the Detroit water, or when they decided to go to this other water system, that they were exercising their contract right to cut the city of Flint off in the next year. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, it's pretty convoluted at this point as to who is what, where, when, why, how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And plenty of calls for investigations to sort it all out, I suppose. Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News. It's Current State's Month in Review. I'm Mark Bayshore. Parole reform was a hot topic this month in Lansing. There's something of a legislative showdown over its House Bill 4138 at the Capitol. What are the big pieces of this parole reform legislation, Zach?
Well, the biggest thing is the idea that when an inmate reaches his or her minimum release date, so let's say someone's sentenced to 20 to 30 years in prison, once they hit 20 years, the Department of Corrections will do a risk analysis to determine how likely they would be to succeed on the outside if released. And if that comes up well, they would be released. There wouldn't be, you know, applying to the parole board or coming up for parole during that 20, you know, that final 10 years, up to 30 years of incarceration.
Right now, parole boards apparently have the authority to keep people in jail for, I think the wording is, substantial and compelling reasons.
Right.
And this would alter that.
There's been a lot of questions about, well, you know, what's the point of sentencing someone to a range of years if, you know, all signs show they're going to be succeed upon release? They've been a model inmate. Why are you, just keeping them in until 30 years? What's the rationale there? So you have lined up on one side a series of Republican and Democratic legislators who are pro-reform, the Department of Corrections and the governor, which is pro-reform. On the other side, you have law enforcement, specifically the Attorney General Bill Schuette, a bipartisan coalition of prosecutors and county sheriffs, saying, this is a terrible idea. You're going to be taking the discretion away from the parole board. That's been heatedly disputed. But the idea being, let's let the parole board make the decision. There's inevitably going to be somebody who's released that's going to commit a terrible crime.
Mm. Let's listen to Attorney General Schuette and his comments on it.
We oppose this autopilot parole, this cruise control parole that would release dangerous criminals early in our communities and jeopardizes the safety of the citizens of the state of Michigan.
So is there more support or more resistance, just broadly speaking?
It's pretty well divided.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got law enforcement and Schuette taking the tough on crime stance, and the legislature and the governor on the other side of the issue. It's a pretty big showdown, and the legislature is not happy with Bill Schuette because he has been taking some pretty serious shots at this legislation and at them for passing it.
What's the timeline?
Well, the Senate still has to take it up. The House has passed it on a pretty bipartisan fashion. The Senate still has to take it up. I think it's going to change in the Senate because the Senate is got more tough on crime type of senators in there than the House.
Let's switch gears here to prevailing wage. The discussion over repealing prevailing wage here in Michigan got really interesting this month. Supporters of the existing law claimed that the petition drive to outlaw it had too many duplicate and invalid signatures. How did this unfold?
Pretty surprising situation. The people who want to keep the prevailing wage basically took the sample of signatures the state uses to analyze whether enough were collected, as well as the full 390,000-some signature list, put them into a database, scrubbed them, and found, what they say is rampant duplication. Almost 19,000 people signing it twice, or something like 10 instances of, people signing it, 10 times. I mean, it's really unusual irregularities and problems. And there'll probably be a Board of State Canvassers hearing next week to look at the petition. And, the people who collected the signatures are sort of nervously saying, no, we think everything's right. But, the folks who scrubbed this are some of the best in the business. They would have to have really monumentally screwed up to be wrong. And they are really confident they are right.
We're running out of time here, but I do want to devote a couple of minutes here to the governor's Detroit school plan. He announced his plan to fix Detroit schools. The DPS is contending with hundreds of millions of dollars of debt and all of the repercussions that go with that. Here is Governor Snyder. Here is Governor Snyder with his remarks from the day the plan was released.
Before I'd even talk about finances, though, I think the bigger challenge is what do you do with all these kids? We want them to get a good education.
What did Governor Snyder propose here, the big pieces?
Well, the big thing is that he's saying that the district is going to need $715 million in state assistance over the next 10 years. The idea being the local millage on commercial and non-principal residence property, instead of going to the state school aid fund, which is what happens in all other school districts, would be used to pay down the district's debt, which is massive. This means less money for other schools around the state. Eventually, after a period of years, the district would go back to a regular elected school board, but there will be this kind of layered system where a central manager sort of does overall planning for both, the regular schools, but then also looks at what's happening with charter schools. The big change from what he talked about in April is that there would no longer be a mandatory common enrollment system for charter schools and the traditional schools. That would not be voluntary. The charter schools really resisted that, but there's been some discussion that, how well is that even going to work on a voluntary basis?
We're just about out of time. Talk to me about the legislative response to this. Where what are you hearing?
Well, I think that there's certainly always angst when legislators are faced with the prospect of their school districts losing money. And this comes on the heels of the legislature bailing Detroit out and helping out of its bankruptcy. So there's always that issue.
A lot of legislators have heard plenty over the years about sending money to Detroit, and it's been an ongoing source of tension.
Yes.
Has it not? And it's not done yet.
No.
So, well, we want to thank both of our guests, Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press and Freep.com, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News and Gongwer.com. It's been our October month in review. Kathy, Zach, thanks very much.
Sure, Mark.
Thanks.